Welcome, friends, to another episode of the Paseo Pathway podcast. Every week this year, we are highlighting a text from our Bible reading plan. So we appreciate all of you joining us for both the reading plan, but also these podcasts. Shelton, today we're going to be going back to the New Testament. Last week, we looked at the greatest command, and we got into the New Testament a little bit there with Jesus. But today we're going to be in Mark chapter 6.
Yeah, famous miracle. The only miracle that's in all four. Not the only. Is it the only? It's in all four? One of the only.
I don't know if it's the only. It's one of the few.
I got to think about that. I just said that so confidently. One of the few that are in all four gospels, the feeding of the 5,000. And so excited to break that apart and to look at that. So as we get started, we typically like to start with a little bit of some tools as we are studying the Word, and I'm not like the one you have this week. It's a simple one, but a good one.
Yeah, last week we talked about repetition, looking for repetition as we're reading, and this week we're gonna suggest looking for contrasts.
Yeah. One of my favorites, it's just one of my favorites. Psalms is Psalm 1, right? Kind of the way of the mocker. Yeah. Versus the way of the Lord and meditating on His Word and just the different paths. And so clearly, very clearly, if you study Psalm 1, those two things are meant to contrast, to catch our attention quite a bit. Jesus and the wise and foolish builders, very different things. Jesus loves to use contrast and in two different stuff. And oftentimes they are emphasized to a large degree to teach us a very specific point. And so anyways, as we're reading and whatever text that is, and you're making observations, we talked about repetition last week, this week, you're looking, hey, are there any contrasts in here? Are there two things that are kind of juxtaposed to each other that are being compared? And if so, the author and God through the author is trying to catch your attention around something. And so,
yeah, this week I was just thinking, just off the top of my head, we looked at the blessings and the curses at the end of Deuteronomy, and it's God's way of really emphasizing something important. In the New Testament, we often see Paul talking about the flesh versus the spirit. John talks about light versus darkness or love versus hate. So, yeah, it's a simple little way to have a tool in the back of your mind as you're reading. Is something being contrasted? And if so, why is God doing that? What are we supposed to, what's supposed to catch our eye and our minds as we're reading those?
Yeah, you can see it oftentimes. I was just thinking, sometimes it's very obvious, very clear. Sometimes not as much, but if you look for it, it's there. So oftentimes in Jesus, He will do it in subtle ways where He has, and Matthew, we have seen this a lot, where the Pharisees and Sadducees do not recognize who Jesus is, but the demon-possessed man does, right? And that's a huge contrast that is startling. The non-Jewish person recognize, like a Roman centurion, recognizes Jesus' messiahship, and the people don't. And Jesus says, hey, not in all of Israel have I seen such faith. He is making a contrast there in a shocking way to a Gentile. So sometimes it's very obvious. Other times you're just kind of looking within the story of wow, there's something happening here that I need to pay attention to. So a great tool.
Yeah, I hope folks can hang on to these tools and these tips because they become subconscious.
You're not thinking about it.
Exactly. Yeah. But if you're new to reading the Bible, looking for contrast, looking for repetition can be something that unlocks meaning from the text that you're reading.
Yeah, and if you're new to reading the Bible, sometimes we don't read it as literature. We feel it is holy literature, but still, it's not like these authors didn't have creativity and they weren't using their God-given creativity as writers to explain very important things and to highlight very important things. And so just as if you put on your student hat and say, I'm going to read this, but praise be to God for, like, we'll study Mark. Mark has a personality and a gifting that he is using to write. And so there are key things that in literature you're picking up. He loves the word immediately, God, right. Immediately. What is he saying in that? Why is he doing that? Different things like that. And so that's why, you know, things like contrast, that's a literature tool as you're reading and giving yourself license to think that way as you study the Bible. So you can see some of the authors personalities and intents that are God-given, mm-hmm. that the Holy Spirit, through their creativity, is capturing for us and can make it come alive.
Yeah. Yep. I love the Gospel of Mark. It's very action-oriented,
man,
like you said.
Yeah.
And we're going to look at a story from Mark chapter 6, the feeding of the 5,000. You've already mentioned that this is one of the few passages that is in all four of the Gospels. Mm-hmm. You know, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. The first three have a lot of overlap, although they also have unique parts of each gospel. John is very different from the first three, but he has this story with a few extra details that he adds in, which is pretty helpful. But let's talk a little bit about this the backstory. We're gonna read verses 30 through 44, but we're gonna jump into the middle of a scenario with Jesus and his disciples. And so I'll share a little bit and then maybe you can complete the backstory Jesus has been very busy. Jesus and his disciples, his popularity has been growing. More and more people have heard about this teacher in the northern parts of Israel and Galilee, and greater numbers of crowds are beginning to seek him out to be healed or to listen to his teachings. John the Baptist has just been executed. So there's this emotional component, I think, to what's happening here.
Certainly.
Jesus sends out the 12 two by two, and they've been on this short-term missions trip, so they've been hard at work. They come back here in Mark chapter 6, and it says things are so busy that they don't even have time to eat.
Which, I love that detail. I mean, you think about 12 dudes, and I get hangry. You get hangry?
Oh, yeah.
At the end, and you're traveling, you're walking, so it's not like they're traveling by, you know, catching the bus to the next village. So as they've been going about, they're walking from village to village to village. This is a mountainous area. So these guys are hiking from village to village, preaching, which I'm always shocked at the end of a Sunday how tired I am. Like teaching, there's something, because I think it's like a spiritual investment, or if you just think even if you're just spending a lot of time with people, having very in-depth conversations, it's draining.
It is.
So these guys are walking, they're having spiritual conversations, they've been preaching, casting out demons, it says, healing people, like people are needing them. So I can just picture them being physically, emotionally, spiritually drained. And Jesus recognizes that as well. He invites them to come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. So Jesus recognizes my boys are tired.
That's right.
But just as a guy, like, they've got to be hungry. They got to be starving.
Right.
And Mark gets that detail, which is just kind of interesting because we'll come back to that at the end of the story.
Exactly. Yeah. So coming into this story of Jesus feeding the 5,000, you engage your imagination and put yourself in the sandals of those disciples. Mm-hmm. You probably are tired. The idea of getting away and having some R&R, just you and Jesus, is very appealing. So let me pick it up and I'll go ahead and read these verses from verse 30 through 44. Mm. Well, maybe we'll start in verse 31 here. Jesus said, "Come away by yourselves to a remote place and rest for a while. For many people were coming and going. They did not even have time to eat. And so they went away in the boat by themselves to a remote place. But many saw them leaving and recognized them. And they ran on foot from all the towns and arrived ahead of them. When he went ashore, he saw a large crowd and had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. Then he began to teach them many things. When it grew late, his disciples approached him and said, 'This place is deserted and it is already late. Send them away so that they can go into the surrounding countryside and villages to buy themselves something to eat.' 'You give them something to eat,' he responded. They said to him, 'Should we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give them something to eat?' He asked them, 'How many loaves do you have? Go and see.' When they found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. Then he instructed them to have all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. And so they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. He took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up to heaven, he blessed and broke the loaves. He kept giving them to his disciples to set before the people. He also divided the 2 fish among them all. Everyone ate and was satisfied. They picked up 12 baskets full of pieces of bread and fish. Now those who had eaten the loaves were 5,000 men. I love this story, man.
I do too.
I love this story so much.
I do too.
So let's just dive into it. What do you see?
Man, this story means a lot to me personally because it has been a place of conviction and encouragement to me throughout the years, because I think this is such a lesson for us in ministry, in whatever area of ministry you are serving in. Because I can't tell you how many times, like, I would come home on a Sunday, man, I'm toast. I am exhausted. I've been preaching. At my previous church, I would preach a couple services on Sunday. Then I would come back and teach. This was at every church till I got here. Teach again on Sunday nights. And then we had little kids. We had little ones. And I would get home, man, and football is on. I'm starving because I don't like to eat before I preach because, you know, my stomach starts hurting. I don't want to do that while I'm preaching. So I tend to not eat much on a Sunday until it's all said and done. And I would feel so justified to just check out. And meanwhile, Amy's been home with the kids all day, or been fighting them to get to church and whatnot. She's doing the bedtime routine, and I come home, and I feel so justified to just check out. And the Lord has used this. You feed them.
Yeah.
You feed them. And there's a part of me where, like, I have felt the Lord say, you need to get up. Yes, you're tired. And then I love that they don't go without. He uses them even more. And at the end, they each get their own basket full. And the Lord still sees their need. And so, anyway, I don't know why this means a whole lot to you. There's more in all of this. I love that he uses Jesus could have handed out the food.
Right.
I just saw something even more in here that I love. What is it why do you love this so much?
I do think we talked last week about repetition. So there's something about Jesus that we learned from this, and I think you've already hinted at it, which is his compassion for the people. Mm-hmm. We can presume that he also was tired, that he had been going nonstop in the days and weeks leading up to this time. The disciples certainly had been, and yet as they approached the shore, and I also just I activate my sanctified imagination, mm-hmm. and I try to imagine myself as a disciple. And you're drawing near to the shore, and you just see 5,000 plus, because it's 5,000 men, so maybe 8,000 to 10,000 people.
Yeah.
You've been expecting quiet, rest, retreat, and as you approach the shore, you see all of these people, and I'd probably be upset. I would not be in a very good state of mind heart as we approach the shore. And yet, it says that when Jesus went ashore, he saw the large crowd and had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So there was something in Jesus that saw the people in their state of need. And it's also interesting that as he sees them, he doesn't feed them immediately. It says he began to teach them many things. And so he saw the people, but he was tuned into the spiritual need that they had.
I love that he saw them, and his compassion was because they were like sheep without a shepherd. Mm. There are echoes of Psalm 23 happening in this that are really neat. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want, right? He makes me lie down in green pastures. Yeah. And you look at what it says, hey, he sees them without a shepherd. And where does he have them sit down so he can feed them?
On the green grass.
Green grass, right? Mm, and so there's something, there's just echoes of this sense of, hey, God sees our needs, and sometimes he has to make us sit down and to receive that he's going to give to us. And to have a shepherd is a pretty awesome gift in life.
Yeah.
What
I like, so you've got Jesus and you've got the sheep without a shepherd, the crowds.
Yeah.
But I'm really drawn to these 12 dudes in the background. I mean, my mind keeps going back to, I believe that they were frustrated.
Yeah, what were they doing when he was teaching?
And
were
so
they like back there rolling their eyes?
He's teaching them many things. And so he's going, and soon the day is drawing to a close, and the disciples feel like, okay, now we feel like it's appropriate now. We can approach Jesus and say, hey, let's send them away. And they've got this good reason. Mm-hmm. They're probably hungry. So let's not keep them.
And Jesus had promised them rest.
Right.
He said, promised come the disciples with me and get rest specifically.
Yeah.
And so they're probably thinking like,
yeah.
Hey, when's that going down?
Like, and Jesus, oh man, I don't know. How would you even say this? It's almost, I don't know if he was just purposely trying to tweak them, but his response is, you give them something to eat.
It doesn't sound restful, does it? It
doesn't sound restful, and it doesn't sound possible. That's their thing, is like, man, not only are we not getting rest, but now we're being, he's telling us to do something that is impossible. We don't have food. We don't have what it would take to feed this crowd.
And that's where the overlap for ministry happens in this so much.
Yes.
Like if we are ministering out of the abundance of what we have,
right,
then we're not going to be dependent upon the Lord.
Yeah.
Right. If I only serve people when I got all the energy,
right,
when I know all the answers, mm-hmm, when I have all the rest in the world, like I'm going to be dependent solely on me and my creativity and my ability. So often, and I've experienced this in ministry, some of the biggest moments of ministry have happened when I'm on empty, man, mm-hmm, because I'm not dependent upon myself. And at that moment, it's like, okay, Lord, I need you for every bit of this. And that's exactly what we see here. These guys are on empty, and yet they got to experience one of the coolest miracles,
right,
that obviously they all remember because they all talk about it.
Yeah.
They're like, man, that was a day. And it meant something for them, however that went down, that he fed so many people. And then at the end of all of that, they got their rest.
Yeah.
They got their rest.
It was an exciting evening, right?
Well, because the story's not over. But
right,
we don't know. Like I do love that then Jesus, like it ends with Jesus saying, here's your basket full, y'all go get on the boat, see ya.
Right.
I'll stay and take care of the rest.
Yeah.
And it's Jesus that dismisses them. So how long, like the next story is, if you don't know what we're talking about, the next story is Jesus walking on the water and they get scared, but that didn't happen until late at night. So between that event and this, you know, releasing everybody, Jesus lets them go.
Right.
And they get to have their basket. They're on the water. There's quiet. There's something beautiful
and
sweet about
that. Yeah, he sends them away and he dismisses the crowd. One thing I like here that we see Jesus do, so he tells them, this whole back and forth is just loaded, I think, with significance. So he says, you give them something to eat. They come back with, basically, it's impossible.
Yeah.
We don't have enough to feed this. Then Jesus says, what do you have?
Yeah.
Go and see.
Yeah.
So go find out, take an inventory. They come back, 5 loaves, 2 fish.
Yeah.
And I always wonder, like, how did they say that? Like, what was the tone when they reported back into Jesus? I'm reading into this, but if it was me, it would be, yeah, we got 5 loaves, we got 2 fish. We told you we don't have enough to feed this crowd. Yeah. And then Jesus says, have the people sit down. And he begins to break the bread. And he begins to divide up the fish. And what I love about that is that, yes, it is a great story about how God works through us, because God will often call us to engage in serving and ministering to others in ways that are far beyond our ability. And yet he'll use us. He'll use what we do have.
Yeah.
And he is the one who makes it sufficient.
I think it's an important thing, because I often hear people say, God will never give me more than I can handle. And that is absolutely false.
This story shows us.
Absolutely false. You will not, he will never give
more
temptation than what you can bear. And so that idea is taken to like, I'm going through this hard time and I know God will never give me more than I can handle. Like baloney, you will constantly face things that are more than you can handle. He will never give you more than he can handle. Mm. And oftentimes he's asking you, hey, bring what you can, but meet me there. My grace is sufficient for you here. You're about to experience my sufficient grace in a miraculous way.
And he involved them. So he used the food that they did have. They brought it to Jesus. He began to break, he blessed it, he began to break, and then hand it back to the disciples. And the disciples were going back and forth between Jesus and the crowds. This had to take a long time.
I love that order. I think about that a lot of times when I'm preaching, just that order of, here's what I got, God, you take that, bless that. He does what he does. He gives it back to them, back to them. Now you go give it to the people. To me, that feels like this. And you know, in preaching, it's so easy just to bypass the Lord, you bless that part. Let me just go over here and I got some bread. Let me feed some folk. Mm-hmm. And just realize you need the Lord. I don't know. To me, this story speaks so much to ministry. But I think for everyday life of just a picture of, hey, we don't have enough to change the world, but Christ does. All right, so take what you got.
So what do we learn about Jesus from this story? What stands out to you?
A, Jesus cares about a rest, mm-hmm. which I think is connected to the next thing as well. Like when Jesus teaches us to pray, he teaches us to pray for our daily bread. Like, I just like that he cares about these little daily needs. He knows what you need before you ask for it. He knows the folks are hungry. He's compassionate. That same compassion he has for the crowd, he has for the disciples. He sees that daily need. And I am not a sheep without a shepherd. That caring Jesus is our shepherd, and he knows my daily need. And so to just take that in to my core to say, hey, he's going to care for me today, and I'm his. What about you? Anything?
One thing that stands out to me is that Jesus sees us in our truest state. You know, he sees the people. I think, again, not to be hard on the disciples, but I think they probably saw a problem. They mm-hmm. saw a task. They saw a crowd that they were going to have to serve. I think Jesus saw the true spiritual state of the people, and therefore what he was feeling, he felt compassion, I think was probably different mm-hmm. than what they were feeling when they were looking at the same group of people. I think that's probably true for me, that Jesus sees people differently than I see them, but I want to grow so that I begin to see people the way Jesus does, and I begin to care about people the way that he cares about them. So I'm both encouraged and challenged by this story, but it's an encouragement that I think the disciples were people like us.
They were.
And yet Jesus is drawing them into his work.
Yeah.
He's really not, he's not being judgmental to them. Yeah. He's helping them to join him in what he's doing with these folks.
Really cool. I love that he loved the crowd so much and he cared about them, and yet they're all going to abandon him. This is probably the high point of his popularity. You know, John will say the crowds keep on following him because he fed them food.
Right.
And he gets on to him later on and says, you're just here because I gave you a dinner.
That's right.
Right. And you're not here because you think I am the bread of life. You just want bread for, you know, your daily bread. Mm. So as much as God cares about my daily bread, that's not all of what I need. Man lives off of more than bread alone, Jesus teaches. And so there's a play here where the crowds get disappointed. There's more to tease out of all this to really think about. And it's sad to think this whole crowd is eventually going to abandon him as it plays out. But for now, as we're studying this famous miracle, it's worth pondering and thinking about and meditating on who our Lord is and how he operates, and that he uses our humanity. Our lack is not his lack.
Right.
You know, our lack is an opportunity. And Paul will say, in my weakness, his power is made perfect.
Yeah.
You know, in this place of my lacking.
I think he's still calling us to trust him the way he did these first disciples. And so I guess a challenge and encouragement that I would give our listeners is, take an inventory. What do you have that Jesus might want to bless and multiply and use to serve others? And don't worry that it's not enough. Just give it to God.
That's so good.
Let him, you know, trust him to make it adequate. I love how it says they all ate and were satisfied.
That's so good. It's so good because I'm just thinking of like how many times like people shy away from sharing Christ with somebody because I'm not that good.
From a human point of view, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Why would you try to feed 5,000 if you had 5 loaves of bread?
Sure. Or we shy away from giving anything because we can't give everything that is needed. Well, you're called to give something, right? So, and let the Lord take that and use it. Yeah, a lot of great things. Hey, we had a really good question come in this week.
We had another question out of Mark's Gospel from chapter 4. So, specifically verse 25. Let me read
Mark 4. So just back a couple chapters here.
Yeah. So this is towards the end of the parable of the sower. In Mark 4:25, Jesus says that whoever has will be given more, and whoever does not have, even what they have will be taken away. So the question is, what does Jesus mean by this, and how should we understand it in our faith?
Because it kind of sounds harsh, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like taken completely out of context.
Yeah.
And this has been done. And this
right.
is why you do not take verses out of context. Right. This means what it means, when he said it, where he said it, and what's going on.
Yeah.
Taken completely out of context, that sounds like the rich get richer and the poor get poorer.
Mm-hmm.
Those
mm-hmm.
who have will be given more. Those that don't have, well, even what they have will be taken away. And you're like...
So let me read the fuller context.
Yeah.
Like we've already said that Jesus had just given a few parables. He gave the parable of the sower, and then he also gave the parable of the growing seed.
Yep.
And so let me just read back up a few verses. Jesus said to them, "Do you bring in a lamp to put it under a bowl or a bed? Instead, don't you put it on its stand, for whatever is hidden is meant to be disclosed. And whatever is concealed is meant to be brought out into the open. If anyone has ears to hear, let them hear. Consider carefully what you hear," he continued. "With the measure you use, it will be measured to you and even more." And then he makes the statement, "Whoever has will be given more. Whoever does not have, even what they have will be taken from them." So given that larger set of verses, what are your thoughts about his meaning here?
I think verse 24 is pretty key to mm-hmm. all of it. Be careful how you listen, what you hear. Be careful with it, with the revelation that you've been given, and how you use it, and that to the measure you use it.
Yes.
And this is important,
mm-hmm.
right? This is important. You know, historically, St. Augustine liked this line a lot.
Oh, really?
And he talked about it, yeah. He likened it to a well, that if you have a well of water and you drink out of it regularly, you keep using it and you're moving it, then it'll keep refilling and giving. But if mm-hmm. you just let it sit, it'll become stagnant. You can't mm-hmm. use it. The other metaphor a lot of people use is like your arm. Mm-hmm. To the degree that you use your arm, it'll grow muscles and get stronger. Mm-hmm. To the degree you don't use it, it just gets stagnant and falls off. Another metaphor people use is like with the basics of math, that if you mm-hmm. learn the basics of math, then you can build upon it and get more mm-hmm. more understanding of how math works, and you can build on it. If you ignore the basics of math, then you're never going to understand math, and you essentially are going to get stupider, right? And so the idea here is Jesus is not saying something harsh. He's giving a reality of this is how nature works.
Right.
That when something is used, it is expanded and grown, and when it's ignored, it atrophies, right? And so
yes.
this lamp, this light that you've been given,
mm-hmm.
a light of revelation of Jesus, to those that take that, use it to want to know more. There's more and more and more to grow in the Lord, and you'll grow. Your understanding of the Lord will grow and grow. If you ignore it, mm-hmm. then eventually, even what you have, what you did know, you'll cease to understand it, and it'll shrink. And remember, this comes right off the heels of Jesus giving the parable of the sower of mm-hmm. seeds that are planted, seem to grow, get choked off, they die out.
Right.
And so he has given an extended period of saying, hey, what has been planted into you, the word, this revelation, you have a responsibility there mm. to use it, to grow on it, or this spiritual revelation will begin to fall away and you won't ignore it.
And it gets into his intent. So God is revealing himself. Jesus is revealing himself to us for us. So he talks about that candle that's been lit.
Yeah.
But he's also wanting to reveal himself through us. And so, again, I would encourage folks, as you're reading, try to share one thing with one person. Jesus said, freely you have received, freely give. And it just becomes a pattern of, Lord, thank you for teaching me who could I encourage with this truth that you're showing me?
Yeah, whatever is hidden is meant to be disclosed.
It's meant to be disclosed.
Teach it. Use it. Share with other people. Yeah, which is something to be said. And I love that you bring that up, because our whole church model for the last, for certain, couple hundred years has been to come sit and receive and listening and then go home.
Right.
Which has
nothing. That's not good for this.
That is not good for this, right? Like, right. You receive, use it.
Yes.
Tell someone about it, and it will grow more and more. And how true is that? That anytime you try to teach something, you learn it so much better and growing in that. So it's just a cool nature of how this works. Jesus says, he's essentially teaching. He's not being harsh. He's saying, this is how it's designed. This is how this is meant to be. And so it's something to learn. So great question. I loved it. Good to learn. Yeah. Anything else you want to add?
Nope. I think we covered it.
Hey, you did a good job using what you have been given today. You can tell on that. You did.
Good.
Abe Sale family, love you. This has been fun. Thank you. Continue to send in your questions. Continue in your own reading and to strive to know the Lord. And maybe this is where we leave. Hey, whatever you learn this week, go share it with somebody. Go talk about it so that maybe your own capacity to understand God will grow even more and you'll get more revelation. Love you. We'll see you next time. Bye.